I never have a chance to look at this side and this side, so hello. I'm usually kind of this, my apologies, but I'm with you. It's a bit too much like tennis. So, just an addendum on that fire story. The Abhayagiri Monastery is, interestingly enough, one of three monasteries all bordering each other. At the base of the valley is Abhayagiri, and then it goes up the valley, and next to it is a Russian Orthodox monastery, Father Damien. The monasteries are very close. And so both of them survived the fire. And the Russian Orthodox church that they built, the monks themselves built it, has a wooden tiled roof. So this fire is going, and there are huge embers floating all over the valley, how it survived, miracle. And so they probably said it was Christ, and we said it was Buddha. The Devas. Unitarians, there you go. But the guy's up top, so on the top of the ridge is a plateau, and there's a Thai monastery there, but it's not really a monastery, it's like a retreat center that the Thai community, I think, I don't know where they're from, Sacramento, somewhere, they use it infrequently, but it had a big meditation hall and about 15 kutis that completely got burnt, totally ash. Fortunately, there was no one living there. So, So the Buddhists have 50-50. The Christians have, the Unitarians are doing great. Okay. Maybe I'll look at those questions later. But, so we have a chance for interviews. You can sign up if you want. In the far, far room. That's where we usually do them. Like yesterday I was saying, to make something conscious, but you know, I think you've often heard me say, what did the Buddha say most often? What words did he mostly say? You probably would have said, it depends. And so any teaching is relative to situation. So I was just thinking how to give an analogy of that. Let's say in our inner world, as things move through us, you could say on one extreme we have tsunamis, and the other extreme we have soap bubbles, right? So tsunamis are deep loss, deep betrayal, you know, all the horrible things that can happen to us and humanity, and then the results of those are tsunamic, if there is such a, is that an adjective? And they're so powerful that you just have to kind of bear them as they come through you. And this is where quite often it's very difficult to speak with people because they just want to fix it for you out of good intention, but then many people find they just have to clam up and do it on their own because people will say, oh, it'll be all right. So there's an attempt to, even the listener doesn't really want to feel your pain or wants to fix it, which isn't really the whole, you know, what you have to do is endure it more. And that's what I found really skillful about Ajahn Chah. He said, oton, endure. He didn't even say it would get better. You just endure, learn to endure, make that, you know, this is what this is about right now, the boredom or whatever, at that time. So those are like tsunamis and to be dismissive of them. So that's, I think, what I was more talking about last night. You have to make this conscious. You have to be fully aware of it. But then wait. And then it's a matter of trusting that this will change, that it's not permanent. Whereas the mind, which hasn't really taken in uncertainty and anicca as a deep intuition or wisdom, then has this fear that it's permanent, and it's not on a rational level. It's just, I got to do something about this. It's horrible. And because we can do things, like we can take a sliver out of our fingers and we can smell gas and prevent the place from blowing up, we can do things, and then, you know, so that's where we come from, fixing. But sometimes you can't fix. And so the Ajahn Sumedho's reflection many years ago was that consciousness is the escape hatch. Things escape into consciousness, and then they have they're the consequence of things that have happened. They're no one's fault in the stream of consciousness. It might be someone's fault that they hurt you, whatever, but it's just natural. But then in nature you have tsunamis and horrible things. And then on the other side of the spectrum, there's soap bubbles. You know, just like little piddling complaint. No big deal. But much of our mind is piddling complaints, right? Just this kind of little soap bubbles. And the basic practice is don't go there. You don't want to, you know, like if it's just a little ho-hum, whatever, just don't go there. But if you said that about tsunamis, you know, it would be impossible. You have no choice. You are there. So you don't want to make a soap bubble into a tsunami, but you don't want to dismiss a tsunami as a soap bubble, right? So it depends. It really does depend. And so the whole range of things that we can experience as human beings. And of course, we always talk about body awareness, how these things affect the body, and that's a very good place to endure tsunamis, just in our kind of visceral, energetic being, hanging with them. But sometimes things are really too much, and you just need to distract. You need to do something else. Look at whatever it is. So, not having a particular fixed position on these things, but just realizing that if we can awaken to things, wisdom has a chance to operate, intuition has a chance to operate. So a kind of trust in the awakened mind, waiting, these attitudes create a foundation for wisdom to apply itself to the situation. Especially if something new comes up or you've not seen it before. So it depends. It depends. But if there's really strong emotional content, you're going to feel it energetically, and you try to be with that energy and go away from the storyline. But as more like an investigation and a caring rather than just trying to get rid of it. And then much of our mind is just habituated to piddling about, blah blah blah, right? And to have the interest in actually, no, I'm not going to go there. And to choose silence and stillness constantly, and it's 24/7, not as an act of like a brutal getting rid of thought, but more like, no, actually, I've heard that piddling thought for 40 years. You know, it's not very interesting, actually. But silence, that's more interesting. And so the attitude is always wisdom and kindness and curiosity, rather than trying to get rid of. And then if you take up something like, let's say, Ajahn Chah's suggestion about using the word anicca as uncertainty, and you have a kind of constant, like a touchstone, and always kind of reminds you, like a touchstone, then that that because the touchstone is something that you understand, like I understand how to use anicca as a perception of non-grasping or non-preoccupation, maybe that's kind of a good way to look at it, that particular word and particular perception, I've understood how that works. So I'm not just parroting a teacher's what I should do as a good Buddhist. Ajahn Chah said to do uncertainty, so I'm going to do uncertainty. But actually there's the insight to apply that and then to do it for a lifetime. Right? So there has to be the insight, which is right understanding. So right understanding, go back to that, it's like this. That's right understanding. And then what would return you to that? Well, it might be, it's uncertain. So my mind is complaining about something and, oh, it's uncertain. And that's quite a refined skill. Right? It's balanced, it's not aversion, it's not indulgence. It comes from a kind of craft-like diligence around your own mind, and that's where we live, in our own minds. And then the application of that day in and day out, day in and day out. So Ajahn Chah, most of his talks, he would constantly come back to uncertainty. So he's obviously doing that. He was doing that practice, that perception. So then if you look at how different teachers of our great lineage, Ajahn Sumedho, he uses the sound of silence. There's always, you listen to his teaching so often. And he goes to that. Oh, this is the way it is now. It's the same thing, really. This is the way it is now. It's the same thing, but he's just using a different ubaya or skillful means. Some people use like malas. Some teachers say the out-breath. Yeah. But it's always returning to the same thing, it's just this pure presence. So if you get that right, and then you kind of look at your own insights, what might help me to remember that? Okay. And then you refine the project to say, for this year, I don't know, I keep talking about this anger thing, right? Or it could be worry or fantasizing, whatever. And then you apply that to the whole spectrum of aversions that we have. And then all of those intentions, first of all, there's the right understanding, the insight into that. Then there's the way to remember that insight, recollect that insight. So we say that's, say, if you're using uncertainty, we call that anicca sanya, the perception of impermanence. So that you constantly recollect. You recollect, and that's an intention. And that intention then plants the seeds for more mindfulness around your own right understanding. So you come to some insight, and then that insight, you're not trying to recreate an experience. That's desire. Right? You're not trying to recreate an experience, but you're rather remembering truth. Right? So when I see a chickadee, I know it's a chickadee because I've looked it up in the book and I've seen it, and they come to my bird feeder. But I'm not trying to have a chickadee experience. And I'm not trying to make a nuthatch into a chickadee. It's just, oh, it's a chickadee, it feels this way. And it's uncertain, it's going to fly away. But then the next bird, yeah, well, that's... But the knowing, they're always the same. So you have the kind of right understanding and then the right intention. So sammasankappa, right intention or right thought. You're inclining the mind to always remember that recollection, which is right mindfulness. You're recollecting that insight in whatever particular techniques you use. And then the effort is to kind of like remind yourself of that, remind yourself, remember that, and then maybe you apply it to one particular part of your conditioning where you do get preoccupied a lot. All right, that's my mind spends 50% of the day in that, in those formations. Okay, that seems like a worthy project. Let's see if we can wake up to that. Right? And then you do wake up to that, and what begins to dominate is suchness as opposed to preoccupation. And you keep doing it, and then silence begins to dominate rather than noise. And then the noise comes in, and oh no, there's the noise. No, no, noise feels this way. And then you just, so the progress on the path is always very, it can only be done in the present moment, because that's all we have to work with. So we're not trying to get there. Again, we're just making the causes and conditions for peace, creating the causes and conditions. And that would be what I would consider faith would be, that you understand that process, and then you apply yourself in the particular ways you need to around your own conditioning, and you have faith in that, you keep doing that, as opposed to faith in some belief in anicca, I believe in anicca, or I believe in anatta, or I believe in sunyata, or I believe, you know, that's really not wisdom, that's just thought. So this is insight or wisdom which can function. All right, shall we do some sitting?